Okay, Shalom Aleichem, everyone. And we are in part three of our class on the pitfalls of excessive rabbinic honorifics. So again, I apologize for this being an abridged session. Had two funerals today and then a Shiva home and just got back from that Shiva house about 5 minutes ago. So I appreciate you all accommodating the limited amount of time that we have today. And we'll end by Mincha, which is 8:20, which I think should be enough time for us to finish learning our topic, because I thought originally this was going to be a two-part class. It turned into a three-part class, but I am confident that we should be able to get through our material by the end of our class. So we are now on page 9. You know what? Let me, if you give me a moment, I'm actually going to reshare the file. I'm going to reshare the document into the chat here, because I realize that some of us, you know, we may have not downloaded it last time. So if you bear with me, I can have it on in just a moment. Ah, welcome, Toby. Okay, so let's see. I have in my files and I have my classes. Ah, rabbinic titles. Okay, it should be uploading and you should see the PDF momentarily. So we're going to go forward. Welcome. We're just about to start. Long day. Oh, okay. Well, welcome. Welcome. Okay, so we spent a lot of time talking about the question about who is a Talmud Chacham, you know, who is a Torah scholar? And even someone that's not necessarily a Torah scholar, you know, Rav Hankin said that someone might just be a Meturgamon. They might just be, yeah, as Toby likes that word, the Meturgamon. So what's a Meturgamon? Literally means a translator. But back in the times of the Talmud, a Meturgamon was someone who he was fluent enough in general Torah concepts to understand the shir from the great Gadol, from the great scholar. But, you know, he wasn't scholarly enough to be a Talmud Chacham in his own right. But what he would do is he would take the complicated and profound concepts of the scholarly class, and he would share those ideas in a easily understandable and relatable manner due to his oratory finesse. So what Rav Hankin was saying is that the average rabbi today is not really a rabbi, they're really a meturgamon. So we dealt with some of those things last time. But then the question was, after we raised the bar so high, you know, again, you know, there's more flexible, more conservative approaches to what makes somebody a Torah scholar. A question that we left off with that I wanted you to think about over the course of the week was, well, what if somebody is a conservative or reform rabbi? So our question has been about within orthodoxy, within those who observe traditional Torah laws. But let's say you have someone who's a clergy member from a different denomination. Would they receive the title rabbi? And as you can imagine, I'm not going to, you know, ask anyone to take the controversial positions. And, you know, actually, you know what? Why not? What would you say for those who are not of the faint of heart, based on what we have learned and without editorializing too much, just based on what we learned, what would you say in terms of referring to a clergy member from a different congregation, sorry, different denomination, by the title of rabbi? And certainly, well, you know what the funny thing is? You don't have to be worried about giving him additional titles. He's not going to ask you for Hagon Harav and all these different kind of things, because that's just not, as far as I know, that's just not simply within their culture. But many times, you know, I have some Orthodox colleagues do this. I see it a little bit more among my colleagues who are in the non-Orthodox world. They're very adamant about appending the name rabbi on Facebook and on social media. So, you know, some Orthodox rabbis do it as well. It's everyone's guilty of it. So the question is, do we give the title rabbi to someone who is not Orthodox?
The answer is no.
So my grandfather says the answer is no. Do we have anyone who would like to dispute that? Toby, what was your
thought? Well, first I want to clarify, when you say, do we give the title, do you mean the person?
Right.
Can't hear her, so please repeat.
Oh.
The question is, you know, the only thing I can decide is if I meet a rabbi who's a conservative rabbi, I reach
out. Ah, very good.
So my answer for me personally would be yes, because you don't want to embarrass me.
Very good. What Toby's arguing, and Irwin is about to say the same thing, Irwin concurs, is that we're not talking about conferring smicha, about conferring ordination on someone who's not Orthodox. But the question simply is, in day-to-day, you know, let's say, you know, you go to a JFS event, you go to a Federation event, you go to Israel March. So are you going to get up there and say, introducing Rabbi Daniel Cohen and Mr. Rabbi from other congregation? As you can imagine, it could create a lot of enmity, and a lot of animosity can grow if you're choosing who you want to confer the rabbi title onto. So that's the point that Toby just shared. And I'm going to try to be good about that, by the way, for those of us who are on screen. I know you can't hear everyone around the table. It's just a limitation of my laptop's capability. Mm-hmm. So I will... So what Toby said... Oh, good. So actually, I misread my own interpretation to what Toby said. Toby's point was that we don't want to embarrass the person. So again, imagine we're having like an Israel rally or something very public, a federation event, and you call up a rabbi from a non-Orthodox denomination, but you call them Mr. So-and-so instead of rabbi. Like, remember me, the disrespectful high school student who didn't call his teacher rabbi, even though he was very learned. So imagine you did that. Would that be considered humiliating the person? Would you be, halvanas punim? You cause someone so much embarrassment that their face whitens. Now, I don't know if not calling someone rabbi will embarrass them to that degree, but, rabbis are very corporeal.
Here's my perspective. As an Orthodox person, if I call somebody who's not an Orthodox rabbi, I am giving the false appearance that I actually, as an Orthodox Jew, consider to be a rabbi within my concept of what's a rabbi. And a rabbi has to adhere to Torah law. If he doesn't adhere to Torah law, he's misusing the title rabbi. And if I call him rabbi, I am misrepresenting him and myself both.
Ah, okay, good. So my grandfather's argument was... So I'll just restate what my grandfather said, and we'll do Susan and Lloyd. Okay, so we'll get to everyone. Don't worry, Susan and Lloyd afterwards. So my grandfather's point is, on the other side, on one hand, yes, Toby makes a point about not embarrassing somebody. But what we have to weigh on the other side of the equation is integrity, is the message that we're giving. If I call someone, you know what there is? There's like this new movement called Kohenet, which is like kind of like, you seen this? It's the most absurd thing. Even like many people I know who are like reform and conservative think that they're beyond the pale. So I know I'm safe. Basically, like, it's these women who want to be these priestesses. So they had a program called Kohenet. They go out to the forest and they do these like syncretistic paganistic rituals, but they use Hebrew words like the Shekhinah. So then it's supposedly Jewish. So again, at what point do you draw a line? Like, you're going to call someone like that a clergy person, a rabbi? Where do you draw a line? Because once you call someone rabbi, someone who doesn't understand the nuances of observance and what is legit and what's not, you might be giving them a false impression. So that's my grandfather's point. So we'll take Susan and then Lloyd's idea.
So first of all, rabbi is not a real title. And some rabbis have told me you can say rabbi because you're just not saying Rav. And you can get around it that way. I mean, but you wouldn't want to cause a community fight or anything. And, they're community leaders in a sense regardless, right? And I was
Susan, I understand your point, which is how I initially thought what Toby was going down. Toby's talking about embarrassing, but which is, this is what we have to weigh, which is there's a matter of principle versus a matter of pragmatism. So on the one hand, I think in principle, from the sources we saw, if someone is not abiding by halachic dictates, which we assume anyone who again, back in the olden days, I'm talking about the olden days because I'm a young guy, but back in the earlier days of the conservative movement, certain conservative rabbis were very, right wing in the conservative spectrum, were hardly distinguishable from modern Orthodox rabbis, remember? So, today though, things have shifted. So the question is, again, on the one hand—
And they have the women too.
Right, that's true. So on the one, right, back then, I think Rabbi Saul Lieberman, I think he was opposed to female ordination. They were very much more principled. Today, it's shifted to be more similar to Reform than to Orthodox, but that's for another class. So Lloyd, what was the point that you wanted to share with us?
Okay.
And then we'll move on.
Sorry, I have to disagree with all these learned people here. I don't subscribe to the notion that a conservative rabbi is lesser a rabbi than an Orthodox one, because all have achieved a certain degree of education, understanding, and, for instance, so that they will be called a rabbi as as a demonstration of achieving this kind of knowledge and understanding, whether they practice in a conservative format or reform format or orthodox, or modern orthodox for that matter.
Okay.
Similarly, I'd like to use the analogy of a doctor.
I was just going to say that.
Office, every doctor's office you go to, you call the person there as a doctor. You don't say, well, you're a general doctor, you're a lesser doctor than somebody who's a specialist who's gone on for additional training. No, you don't do that. You call everybody a doctor. And the same thing with the rabbi. You call every person who has achieved a certain degree of learning and is ordained to practice in the Jewish faith, a rabbi.
Okay,
so you go to a conservative rabbi or you go to a reform rabbi, that's your choice because of a matter of practice, liturgy practice.
Okay, so we're gonna.
I'm against Jew against Jew.
Mm-hmm.
And
Right. Basically
that's what. Now you go, like Joe Lloyd said, you go to a doctor. Is your doctor an MD? Or is he a DO?
Right.
Or is he a PhD? I mean, you know, what's in a...
Better not be just a PhD. Or an EDD.
Right, exactly. I just don't like this. And there are a lot... I happen to know of a conservative rabbi who was more orthodox than a lot of orthodox rabbis are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So who are we to judge their amount of religiosity?
Okay. So it looks like Lloyd and Audrey are making a very strong argument for the other side.
Yes.
We'll take one more point. Oliver, just briefly one point, and then we'll move on.
Hello?
Yes. I mean, I could say a lot of from both directions, but I like the point of the gentleman here and also the lady that just spoke, just if everyone doesn't know, I'm still myself in a non-orthodox setting and community and background. The rabbi knows, again, I have many disagreements with, that's why I'm actually trying to involve more in the orthodox community. But nevertheless, I remember, I was discussing with another Orthodox rabbi who insisted you cannot be a Jew unless you are within a Orthodox community. And actually a doctor friend of mine was right there standing with him. But Rabbi, Oliver's learned basically everything, 90% plus of what he knows, living in a non-Orthodox world. So, I mean, that point I do respect. There's a lot of things I really disagree with. I mean, to where I kind of like to withdraw and move to more Orthodox community, but I have learned from them, even though they're probably, again, if you were to compare it to professors or something, they were maybe not the best kind. I still learn from them. I did learn from them. So that's a good point. These are Jews. I have learned. So there is some. And again, I think that the fact that these are Jews, even though we're all, there's disagreement, a great deal of it. I would say this would be really bad. Yes, if you had some completely non-Jewish people decide that their new religion, they were going to start calling people rabbi and insist that in public, that would be almost like an anti-Semitism type of thing.
Right. So we definitely, I think we don't want to go down that way, Oliver.
Again,
right?
Not to have a battle. And I think really, the more learned, the more traditional, I think it can really win the ground on other things than on titles.
Okay. So I think your point's well taken, Oliver and Lloyd and Audrey. I think I'm very sympathetic to the argument that, of course, we want to respect a degree of professional training, right? You know, someone earns a doctorate, no matter whether it's in a doctorate of philosophy or in medicine, we want to give them proper recognition. But let me ask you a question, think more critically about, and we'll see the sources that might help us with it. When we call someone a rabbi, what do we mean when we call them a rabbi? Do we mean that they're just a general Jewish spiritual leader? If that's what the term rabbi means, that you're a general Jewish spiritual leader, then I would agree that there's no reason that a Reform rabbi, an Orthodox rabbi, a Jews for Jesus rabbi, or anyone who wants to consider themselves to be a Jewish
spiritual
leader can take that on. There's no reason but essentially it makes the term almost meaningless at the same time. So what I want to get back to is Lloyd's point about professional training. The fact of the matter is, and I don't want to dispute, I don't want to get embroiled in argument, and I appreciate everyone's feedback. What we learn at an Orthodox rabbinical school and what they learn at a, let's say, Reform rabbinical school do not resemble anything. Almost like the curricula are completely different and they're not even the same thing. At a Orthodox rabbinical school, you're studying Shulchan Aruch and Nosei Kelim. You're studying the halachic codes, like things that we see on this source sheet, and you're plumbing the depths of Jewish law. In Reform Judaism, I can't even go on a website. You'll see their syllabus. They're studying completely different things. I'm not even going to get into good or bad or quality. Just they're different completely, and so not a matter of good or bad. I'm not even going to go over there. But when I have the title rabbi and a Reform rabbi is a title rabbi, it just simply doesn't mean the same thing because our professional training doesn't resemble each other. The only things we probably do have in common maybe is when it comes to the pastoral training, the vocational aspects. But in terms of the actual content that we're learning, there's almost no similarity between them. And this is having colleagues who are in both schools.
So, but you should each get the title that you achieved for the place that you went, and it doesn't mean that it means the same an Orthodox versus a Reform rabbi. It's just the name for what they achieved. But you don't have to take any advice from them. You can choose who you want to learn with and who you want to take halachic advice from.
Right. Okay. Okay. I'm sorry. I have to apologize. I think we're limited on time, and we do need to go forward. So is it okay?
A question.
Okay. So I'll just take questions and go forward.
Can't hear.
I'll repeat it. Yes. Okay. Good. So Toby. Very good.
You have to pass certain words to be adopted. You have to pass certain words to
excellent.
Be
aware,
and this is what you have to pass to be adopted.
Very good. So I'll share what Toby suggested. Right. So what Toby suggested is that there should be just a general core amount of knowledge that you need to know to be a rabbi. So in the Gemara, there's called Yora Yora and Yadin Yadin. So what I studied for a YU is called Yora Yora Smicha, which is Yora Dea. So that means I know areas of Hilchos Nida, I know areas of Kashrus. Obviously, I also know, include Shabbos and other areas as well. Yadin Yadin is you want to know also certain areas of additional marital law, monetary law. You want to become a judge. So what Toby's argument is basically that, you know what, we're not even going to ask you about your opinions. There just has to be a general aptitude test that shows that you have a baseline level of knowledge and understanding of the basic Jewish halachic text. So your point's very well taken. I would actually agree with that. That's actually what the chief rabbi in Israel does. There's the Rabbanut Smicha test, which is somewhat of a standardized general collection of knowledge that one must have to become a rabbi. And they're not actually figuring out how observant you are, what your opinions are on particular issues, but you just have to know, you have to be able to pass the test. So, okay, this is all by way of, now I'm glad we got different arguments for why yes and why not, pro and con. You know what we got to do now? Instead of shooting at what Rav Schechter calls a baich svara, which is, what our gut tells us, let's take a look in the sources. And let's see what the sources have to say about this question. So page number 9, and hopefully by now you've been able to find the PDF in the chat. If you can't, it's there. I don't know what else to say. So on page 9, source number 19, we're not going to go through it, but essentially this is one instance that Rabbi Gill's student pointed out in an article in Chakira Journal. So Chakira Journal, it's one of those Jewish, basically an Orthodox journal out there. Someone wrote an article where he didn't refer to conservative rabbi by rabbinic title. And so Rabbi David Wolf, who's a conservative rabbi at Sinai Temple Los Angeles, he wrote this scathing letter back in the letters to the editor. So you can read it at your own, peruse at your own pleasure when you have a chance. But getting to the real sources here, remember all the way at the beginning, if you even glance back at literally the first source in our packet, we said that a zaken ashmai is not included within the category of those who receive honors for being Torah scholars. Now, what is a zaken ashmai? Going back to page 9, source 20, Rashi says someone who doesn't qualify for rabbinic honorifics, for rabbinic honors in general, is someone who is asham rasha v'am ha'aretz, someone who is wicked, who's a rasha, and an ignoramus. So Tosos asks, Vikasha, next source, Dehi kamar isi ben Yehuda, the seva mashma afil zakin ashmai, v'amitza afil akos levazos lezalzalo. What's the havamina? What was the initial thought of the Gemara that I would honor someone who's a zakin ashmai? How, there's actually an imperative to degrade and to insult somebody who claims to be a scholar but desecrates the laws of the Torah. So therefore he says, what's a zakin ashmai? Klomar bor v'ama aret. Somebody who is just a general ignoramus. So, but certainly, kal v'chomer, someone who deliberately does not keep the laws of the Torah. You look in the Aruch HaShulchan, based on the Shulchan Aruch, source 23. With davar pashut hu shetamid chacham shein bo yir shemai mizalz v'mizos. Even if somebody is a Torah scholar, they did pass the Rabbanut Smicha exam. They passed the YU Smicha exam, the Ner Yisrael Smicha exam, the BM, whatever it was. But he doesn't have fear of heaven, and he cheapens. He doesn't treat the mitzvos with the, he doesn't observe the mitzvos with the respect that they deserve. Harei Kekal Shebet Sibor. He is like the lightest of the congregation, meaning he's basically like any other Joe on the street. And even worse, you are not allowed to give him any honors at all. And that sounds, by the way, not just rabbinic honorifics, but that means any general honors. Because it's one thing, look, if I don't know halacha so well and I don't keep it so well, that's one thing. Okay, look, I'm still going along my journey, learning about observance, learning about halacha, okay. But if somebody's a Torah scholar, meaning they know what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, they went through the Mishnah Berurah, they went through all the Dir Shuv footnotes on there as well, like we saw, and you went to the Piskei Teshuvos and you plumbed the depths, and afal pikein, even still, you reject, and then you choose to reject and you don't keep the mitzvos, then that certainly says something bad. Which again, I don't want to get too political, but the argument that's been made against ascribing rabbinic titles to those who are not keeping halacha, which generally we assume is someone who's not keeping within orthodox law, is either, it could be one of two things. Either number one, well, if they're not keeping the laws because they don't know the laws well enough, then you can't really be a rabbi if you don't have a general understanding of Jewish law. But secondly, or if someone really knows the laws well enough, but then they reject the laws, they choose not to observe them, that might even be worse. So again, I'm giving you the information, you can choose how you want to apply it. But the question comes back to the point that Susan made and others made, which is, okay, you know what? Let's say I'm convinced that a rabbinic title can only be given to someone who observes Jewish law and teaches Jewish law according to the proper traditional standards. So then the question is what? So now every time I meet a non-Orthodox rabbi, I have to call him Mr. So-and-so. I mean, that's like, I'm going to get ostracized for that. And then maybe I'll humiliate them like Toby suggested. So what's the way around it? So here's a suggestion that Ramosha Feinstein doesn't actually give himself, but he implies it. Look at source 24, the last source in this section. Ramosha Feinstein, when he refers in his chuvos to a non-Orthodox rabbi, you look in the second to last line, I bolded and underlined it. What's that word? Can anyone read it? What's that word say? Resh. Aleph, Beis, Yud, Yud, Samech. Anyone ever see that word?
No, I was going to say
Rivas, but it's not. Not Rivas? It's a transliteration of rabbis. You see that? So when he refers to non-Orthodox, he says rabbi, transliterated, but you can see at the beginning of the tshuva, he has a resh with the strechel over there. So it's Rav. So what some people do is, which might work, I've actually, I'll admit I've done this myself, is that when I'm in a context, I don't want to deny, like Lloyd said, I don't want to deny someone their professional title because, you know, I don't want to be disrespectful. I want to keep the peace. I want everyone to be happy and jolly and get together and Shalom Yisrael, right? But at the same time, I need to acknowledge that there is simply a qualitative definitional difference between the guy who has the Orthodox ordination versus the guy who doesn't. So what I'll do sometimes is when both are together, I'll say Rav and Rabbi. And I think it's a subtle way of distinguishing, but in a way that still gives acknowledgement to professional honorifics. So no one would have ever picked up on it had I not told you, but I guess if I'm ever in an interdenominational context, now you guys will call me out for it. So on the bright side, that would mean we remember something a few weeks down the line from the shir. So that's also, that's a good thing. I'll consider that a good thing. Okay. In our 10 minutes that we have left, I wanted just to run through a few sources. So I appreciate everyone holding your questions. We're limited on time, but certainly I'm happy to make time maybe next time at the beginning to field some questions. Okay, final section. So, okay, we're convinced. We understand the obligation of the constituent of how to refer to who gets a title rabbi, who doesn't, who I'm supposed to call, who I'm not supposed to call, who do I call Agon HaRav. But what about the responsibility of the rabbi himself? So I'm talking to myself a lot over here. Responsibility of a rabbi himself. So you look in the Gemara in Maseches Erevin, source 25, page 11. Our rabbis tell us that Shekol Amashpil Atzmo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Magbio, one who lowers themselves, God lifts them up. B'chol Magbio Atzmo, but he who lifts himself up as a mat, you know, as a means of arrogance, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashpilo, God casts him down. Kol Mechazer Agdula, anyone who chases after accolades, after greatness. Gedula Barachis Mimenu, the greatness flees from him. B'chol Barach Min Agdula, anyone who chooses and tries not to receive accolades. Gedula Mechazeres Acharav, the Gedula, the greatness, pursues him instead. And so, you know, this is just one example in rabbinic literature about the importance of Anivas, the importance of humility. And so what that means practically is you look in source 26, it was asked in Shaz Tshuva's Chaim Shal about a rabbi who asked, he said that on my tombstone, on my gravestone, I don't want any titles. I don't want to be called rabbi. Just call me the same way you would call anybody else. And actually in his tshuva, he rules at the end that you can do that. V'adai chayavim l'kayim tzavaso in the bowl, the way at the end. He says, we actually should honor his request. Because he saw that as a tikkun. He saw it as a tikkun for himself, as a rectification for anything that he did during life, that maybe he was a little bit too arrogant, he had too much pride. So this is the way of him trying to begin to rectify that as he goes to the next world. But the question is, can a rabbi actually forgo honors? Meaning, for instance, let's say I wanted to get up there and I want to say to shul, no one's allowed to call me rabbi anymore. It's just Moshe Kurtz, that's it. You're never allowed to refer to me as rabbi. Take it out of all the announcements, out of everything. So would I be allowed to do that in theory, assuming Toby allowed me to do so? So so the Gemara in Kiddushin actually has a machlokus about this. There's a dispute about Harav, so source 27. Harav Shemach al Kvodo, Ink Kvodo Machl. One opinion says that a rabbi cannot forgo, cannot renounce his honor. Whereas Rav Yossi says, Afil Harav Shemach al Kvodo, Kvodo Machl. Someone can do that. The Gemara asked, Amar Rava, Hachi Hashta Hasam HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omadilehu, V'Torah Dilehi. So Machalei, so the Likare. So God is allowed to forgive. God's allowed to give up on his own kavod. That's what we saw in the case of Asota. But whereas the Talmud Chacham, he amassed the Torah for himself. So the question is it called his Torah once he studies the Torah? Or is it still the Torah of God? If it's still the Torah of God, he has no right. It's not his prerogative to give up on the honor. So when people honor this scholar, the Talmud Chacham, they're not really honoring him, they're honoring the Torah that he has amassed. They're honoring the Torah that he has somewhere in his brain. Whereas some might understand that actually he might actually acquire the Torah himself. Once I study the Torah, it becomes my Torah, and I can choose if I want to forgo the honors that are due to me because of that. So now so it says at the end of the Gemara, we're not going to go through all of it, that yes, you are allowed to actually forgo certain honors, but there was a case where Rava, of course, is a big rabbi. He was going around at a dinner party for a wedding, I think for his daughter. He was pouring wine for different rabbis, but they didn't stand up for him. And he got really upset. Why didn't you stand up for me? So they said, what do you mean? I thought you forgave, you renounced, you waived any honors we had to give you. So the Gemara says at the end, afil hachi hider mevad lebo. They still had to give him what we call hider. So the very important distinction is between kavod versus hider. Kavod is an additional level of honor, the Brisker Rav tells us in source 29, whereas hider is the baseline level of honor that someone needs to be given. Actually, you know what? Let's distinguish between honor versus respect. So to honor somebody might be by giving additional titles like a Gohan Harav, I'm a Kobol, I'm a person, et cetera, et cetera. But whereas basic decency, basic respect is something that cannot be forgiven. And Britzkrov says that the kind of honor that we give to someone who's a Gadol Hador, a leader, a luminary of the generation, or someone's personal Rebbe, you give additional honors. But whereas the honor that we give to any individual, which is not honor actually, it's respect, it's called hider, that's something that cannot be forgiven. And so the question is the basic title of rabbi something that can't be forgiven? It would seem from this model that maybe additional titles like a Gaon Harav and all those extra honorifics, that might be considered honor, that might be kavod, whereas hider, which is the baseline respect, so remember the source that we saw at the beginning, it's possible that nowadays the term rabbi has come to mean has come to be a basic level of respect, to the point like Lloyd was saying, that if you don't call a rabbi by his title, he'll get very defensive over it. So that's seen as the baseline amount of respect that needs to be given. But the question is, you know, again, in this line of work, I only, you know, I've begun discovering myself. It's something that, you know, easily leads someone to feel full of themselves and have a lot of arrogance. So it might make sense to err on the side of caution and err on the side of informality. So the question is, what can you do? So the Chazanish says, on occasion, you're able to forgo your title, or not, you didn't say title, but you can forgo certain honors, but you shouldn't do it by default. You can't default, renounce your rabbinic title altogether, but you'd be allowed to do it on occasion. So what my final thoughts, there's additional sources here, but I leave it for your viewing pleasure, is that I think there are times that are appropriate, times that are inappropriate. Now, like if we want to refer to someone who's a Torah scholar with certain titles, gesundheit, we could do what we want. But when it comes to the rabbinic figure himself, I always think that it's best practice not to insist on titles. The only time that I'm just sharing what I generally do. I think the few occasions that I do introduce myself by title is probably in a life cycle event, where I think people appreciate more having a rabbinic presence. So if I'm just come in as, you know, Moshe Kurtz, another guy living here, they want to actually feel comforted by having a rabbinic presence with them. So that's, you know, one of the few times I'll actually introduce by title. But I think in general, it's better to err on the side of caution, sort of err on the side of less titles. And then, you know, I leave it to everyone else who I interact with to decide how much they want to heap on. But absolutely no one should ever think of using the Tyron Hagon or any of those additional things. Don't go beyond that. That's my basic conclusion. And again, we can pick up the rest of the ideas next week, but depending on our adult education meeting, we'll see when that happens. There's a slight chance that I might have an adult education meeting at the same time.
Oh, that's right.
I'll let you know. But okay, Yasher Koach. Oh, no? Okay.
Excellent. All right, thank you.
All right, Yasher Koach, everyone. Thank you for joining.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, too.
All right. Have a good night, everyone. Laila,
too.
Bye. Bye. Bye.